Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Imagine a peaceful Vancouver neighborhood where life moved at a quiet, predictable pace until one day everything changed. The Marple murders weren't just another crime, they were a shocking act of violence that ripped through the heart of the city, leaving an indelible mark on its soul. In this episode, we're diving deep into the chilling events that unfolded in Marple, where innocent lives were brutally cut short by a killer whose actions stunned the nation. As we uncover the grisly details and the terrifying impact this crime had on the community, you'll see why this case stands out as a defining moment in Vancouver's history. Stay with us as we uncover how this single horrifying event forever changed the city, leaving scars that still haunt Vancouver to this day. Trust me, you won't want to miss a moment of what's coming. Marple is one of Vancouver's oldest neighborhoods, with a rich history dating back over a century. Nestled along the southern edge of the city, bordered by the Fraser River to the south, and Oak Street to the east, Marple has long been recognized as a gateway to Vancouver. Originally a hub for transportation and industry, that neighborhood evolved into a predominantly residential area as the city expanded and the need for family-friendly communities grew. In its early days, Marple was known for its working-class roots. The area was home to many who worked in the nearby mills, factories, and transportation industries. Over time, as the city developed and the industrial focus shifted, Marple began to attract a more diverse population, including middle-class families, professionals, and retirees looking for a quiet place to settle down. The neighborhood's affordable housing, coupled with its proximity to both the airport and downtown Vancouver, made it an ideal location for people seeking a balance between urban convenience and suburban tranquility. Marple's residential streets are lined with a mix of charming heritage homes, modest bungalows, and low-rise apartment buildings, reflecting the area's historical evolution and diversity. The neighborhood is also home to several parks, schools, and community centers, which have long served as gathering places for local families. Marple Park, Fraser River Park, and the Marple Oak Ridge Community Center are just a few examples of the community spaces that contribute to the area's close-knit feeling. The residents of Marple were known for their friendliness and community spirit. It was a place where people looked out for one another, and neighborhood events like block parties, school fairs, and community cleanup days were common. The local shops and small businesses along Granville Street, the main commercial artery running through Marple, further added to the neighborhood's charm. These establishments were often family-owned, passed down through generations, and served as social hubs where locals would catch up on the latest news over a cup of coffee or a meal. One of the most defining aspects of Marple was its sense of stability. For decades, the neighborhood had seen little in the way of dramatic change. Crime rate was exceptionally low, particularly when it came to violent crime. Marple's reputation as a safe and secure area made it particularly attractive for families with young children and seniors looking for a peaceful place to retire. It was not uncommon to see children playing outside unsupervised or elderly residents taking leisurely walks in the evenings, confident in the safety of their surroundings. This long-standing sense of safety and community made the Marple murders all the more shocking. The neighborhood, which had been a haven of peace and predictability, were suddenly thrust in the spotlight as the site of a brutal and senseless crime. The violence that erupted in Marple on a fateful day in September 2017 was something that residents could never have imagined happening in their quiet, close-knit community. The murder shattered the illusion of security that had defined Marple for so long, leaving the neighborhood grappling with fear, grief, and a deep sense of loss. In the aftermath, the Marple community struggled to come to terms with what had happened. The tight bonds that had once defined the neighborhood were tested as residents sought to rebuild a sense of safety and trust. The crime served as a grim reminder that even the most peaceful and secure communities are not immune to violence. The scars left by the Marple murders would take years to heal, and the memory of those tragic events continues to cast a shadow over the neighborhood, reminding everyone that Marple, once considered an untouchable sanctuary, had been forever changed. Richard Jones and Diana Ma Jones were more than just names in the headlines. They were pillars of the community, loved by those who knew them, and deeply intertwined with the fabric of life in Marple. Their tragic deaths were not just the loss of two individuals, but the loss of a couple who had spent their lives making the world around them a better place. Richard Jones was a man of quiet dignity and unwavering kindness. Born and raised in British Columbia, Richard was the kind of person who embodied the values of integrity, humility, and hard work. In his professional life, Richard had worked in various roles that often went unnoticed by the broader public, but were crucial to the functioning of the community. His work history included roles in the transportation and logistics sectors, where he earned a reputation for being reliable, meticulous, and always willing to go the extra mile. Though his career was not in the public eye, Richard's impact was felt deeply by those who knew him. In his retirement, he didn't withdraw from life, but rather became even more engaged in the community. Richard was the kind of neighbor who would shovel snow off the sidewalks during the winter, help maintain the local park, or offer a hand to anyone in need. His deep sense of responsibility to his community was matched by his love for the simple things in life: a good book, a walk through the neighborhood, or a quiet evening spent with his wife Donna, or Diane, excuse me. Richard's understated nature belied a deep well of empathy and care. He was the type of person who, in today's fast-paced world, represented a fading generation of individuals who valued community, consistency, and quiet contributions over personal acclaim. Excuse me. His loss was particularly felt among the elderly in Marple, many of whom had come to rely on his quiet support and friendship. Diana Jones was a force of nature, known for her boundless energy, compassion, and dedication to improving the lives of others. Born in Hong Kong, Diana moved to Canada as a young child and quickly made a mark on her new home. Her early life was characterized by a strong drive to succeed and a deep commitment to helping others, which had led her to pursue a career in occupational therapy. Diana's work as an occupational therapist was nothing short of exemplary. She spent decades working at Vancouver General Hospital and Strong Rehab Center, where she became a leading figure in her field. Her work wasn't just about helping patients recover physically. Diana was committed to restoring their independence and dignity, often going above and beyond to ensure that her patients felt valued and supported. Her efforts did not go unnoticed. Diana received numerous accolades throughout her career, including the 2015 award from the Canadian Association of Occupational Therapists for her outstanding contributions to the profession. But Diana's impact extended far beyond her professional achievements. She was a vibrant, active member of the Marple community, known for her infectious smile and her ability to connect with people from all walks of life. Whether she was volunteering at a local event, participating in neighborhood cleanups, or simply chatting with neighbors during her daily walks, Diana's presence brought warmth and positivity to everyone she encountered. Diana was also passionate about maintaining a healthy and active lifestyle. She was frequently seen cycling through the neighborhood or working in her garden, where she found solace and joy in nurturing plants and flowers. Her love for life, combined with her professional dedication, made her a role model for many in the community, particularly for younger women who looked up to her as an example of what it meant to be both successful and kind-hearted. Together, Richard and Diana were a couple that exemplified the ideals of community, involvement, and mutual support. Their home in Marple was not just a private residence, but a place where friends and neighbors felt welcome. They were the kind of couple who would host small gatherings, bring food to community potlucks, and always make time for a friendly chat with those they encountered. Richard and Diana's relationship was one of deep mutual respect and love. They complemented each other perfectly. Richard's quiet strength balanced by Diana's vibrant energy, they were often seen together, whether walking hand in hand through the neighborhood or walking side by side on a community project. Their partnership was an inspiration to those who knew them, showing them a life well-lived is one filled with life, service, and commitment to others. Their involvement in the community was not driven by a desire for recognition, but a genuine belief in the importance of giving back. Whether it was through Richard's steady presence and willingness to help others, or Diana's professional contributions and community activism, the couple left an indelible mark on Marple. They were the kind of people who made their community a better place simply by being a part of it. But then, September 26, 2017 was a day that began like any other in the tranquil neighborhood of Marple. It ended in a tragedy that would forever haunt the community. The events of that day unfolded with a terrifying speed, leaving a trail of devastation in their wake. The morning of September 26 was uneventful for Richard Jones and Diana Jones, a typical day in their lives as a retired couple enjoying their peaceful routine. Richard, who was known for his quiet demeanor, likely spent part of his day on one of his regular walks through the neighborhood. Diana, a more active and vibrant presence in the community, may have dedicated her morning to gardening or perhaps engaging in a fitness routine, as she often did. As the day progressed, they likely had lunch together, perhaps discussing their plans for the evening. By all accounts, the couple had no reason to suspect that anything was amiss. The day continued without any signs of the horror that would soon befall them. In the late afternoon or early evening, Rocky Rambo entered their lives in the most violent and unexpected way. Rocky Rambo, a man with no prior connection to the couple, had been wandering the Marple neighborhood in the hours leading up to the attack. He believed that he had been observing the area looking for a target. What led him to choose Richard and Diana remains unclear, but the randomness of his selection only adds to the chilling nature of the crime. At some point, Rocky Rambo approached the couple's home on West 64th Avenue. Armed with a large knife and a pair of gardening shears, he forced his way inside. What followed was a brutal, frenzied attack that left both Richard and Diana with fatal injuries. The exact time of the murders is uncertain, but it's believed that the assault took place in the early evening, possibly as the couple was preparing for dinner. Rocky Rambo's attack was relentless and savage, leaving the scene of the crime soaked in blood and horror. Richard and Diana, who had lived quiet lives full of kindness and community spirit, were met with a level of violence that shocked even the most seasoned investigators. The discovery of the murders was as shocking as the crime itself. That evening, a concerned family member attempted to contact Richard and Diana, but received no response. Worried, they decided to visit the couple's home to check on them. What they found upon arrival was a scene of unimaginable horror. The family member immediately called 911, and the Vancouver Police Department responded swiftly. Officers arrived at the scene within minutes, securing the area and entering the home with a growing sense of dread. Inside, they found the lifeless bodies of Richard and Diana, both bearing multiple severe injuries inflicted during the attack. The officers quickly realized they were dealing with a crime of extraordinary brutality. The scene was chaotic, with signs of struggle evident throughout the house. Blood was spattered across the walls and floors, and the bodies of Richard and Diana bore the marks of a sustained and violent assault. The sheer savagery of the crime left the first responders shaken, and the neighborhood was soon cordoned off as a crime scene. Detectives from the police department's major crimes unit were called in to take over the investigation. They immediately began the painstaking process of collecting evidence, photographing the scene, and documenting every detail that might provide a clue to the killer's identity. Forensic teams worked throughout the night, gathering samples, examining the victims, and searching for any trace of the perpetrator. The police knew that time was of the essence. The randomness of the attack suggested that the killer could strike again, and the community was now on edge. Fearful that the violence might not be over, as investigators combed through the scene, additional officers were deployed to canvass the neighborhood, seeking out witnesses who might have seen or heard something unusual. In the hours that followed the discovery of the crime, the police began interviewing residents in the surrounding area. Marple was a close-knit community, and it was hoped that someone might have noticed something that could lead to the killer. Several neighbors reported hearing disturbing sounds coming from Richard and Diana's home that evening. Some described what they thought were loud thuds or crashes, but at the time, these noises were dismissed as part of the usual background noise of daily life. No one could imagine that these sounds were the result of a brutal murder taking place in their peaceful neighborhood. One neighbor recalled seeing a man who seemed out of place walking down the street in the late afternoon. The man was described as wearing dark clothing and carrying what appeared to be a large object, possibly a bag or a backpack. The neighbor noticed that the man seemed to be lingering in the area, walking slowly and occasionally looking around as if he were searching for something. At the time, the behavior was curious but not alarming enough to warrant concern. It was only after the murders were discovered that the sighting took on a much more sinister significance. Another resident reported seeing the same man near the corner of West 64th Avenue and Granville Street earlier in the day. He had been standing near a bus stop, seemingly waiting, but he did not board any of the buses that came by. Instead, he continued to stand and watch. He were observing the neighborhood. These accounts, though fragmented, began to paint a picture of a stranger moving through the neighborhood with a purpose. As detectives pieced together the timeline, they realized that this man could very well be their suspect. Surveillance footage from nearby businesses and homes was quickly collected and reviewed. Although the quality of the footage varied, it showed a man matching the witnesses' descriptions walking through the area around the time of the murders. He was seen entering and leaving the vicinity of Richard and Diana's home, carrying a dark object. Footage confirmed that the suspect had been in the neighborhood for several hours before the attack, possibly scouting for a target. The randomness of the attack and the apparent lack of motive left the community in a state of shock and fear. Residents who had once felt safe now locked their doors and windows, weary of the possibility that the killer could strike again. The neighborhood, once defined by its tranquility, was now gripped by a sense of vulnerability and dread. The name Rocky Rambo Way Nam Cam is now synonymous with one of Vancouver's most shocking and senseless crimes. A man whose actions left a lasting scar on the city. Cam's background and the factors that led him to commit such a heinous act are as complex as they are disturbing. Rocky Rambo was born in Hong Kong in 1985 and immigrated to Canada with his family at a young age. His early life was relatively unremarkable, marked by a quiet, introverted personality. He grew up in Calgary, Alberta, where he attended school and led what appeared to be a typical life for a young immigrant. Despite his unusual name, reportedly inspired by two famous movie characters, Rocky Balboa and Rambo, he did not stand out in any significant way during his formative years. Cam's behavior in his early years did not exhibit any overt signs of violence or criminal tendencies. He was described by those who knew him as quiet, somewhat socially isolated, but not someone who would have been expected to commit such a brutal crime. However, as Cam reached adulthood, there were indications that all was not well beneath the surface. In his 20s, Rocky Rambo began to exhibit increasingly bizarre and antisocial behaviors. He became more withdrawn, spending large amounts of time alone, often engrossed in video games. His social interactions dwindled, and he seemed to struggle with finding direction or purpose in his life. Despite these warning signs, there was little in Cam's past to suggest that he was capable of the kind of violence that would later shock the entire city of Vancouver. While Rocky Rambo had no formal history of mental illness, his behavior in the years leading up to the murders raised concern about his psychological state. He became increasingly detached from reality, immersing himself in a world of fantasy, particularly violent video games that featured themes of combat, survival, and killing. His obsession with these games appeared to blur the lines between reality and fiction, contributing to the growing sense of alienation from the world around him. There is evidence to suggest that Cam struggled with feelings of inadequacy and failure, particularly as he entered adulthood and found himself without a clear path in life. He lacked steady employment, meaningful relationships, and a supply network, leading to a deepening sense of isolation. It is likely that this combination of factors contributed to a growing resentment and anger within Cam, emotions that he was unable or unwilling to express in healthy ways. Despite these red flags, Cam remained under the radar, living a seemingly quiet life in Vancouver. He had no criminal record, and was not known to law enforcement prior to the murders. This made his eventual actions all the more shocking, as there was little in his background to suggest that he would commit such a brutal and senseless crime. The question of what motivated Rocky Rambo to commit the murders of Richard Jones and Diana Jones is one that continues to baffle investigators and psychologists alike. Unlike many violent criminals, Rocky Rambo had no clear motive for his actions. He did not know the victims, had no personal grievances against them, did not stand to gain anything from their deaths. One possible explanation for Cam's actions is that he was driven by a deep-seated desire to act out violent fantasies that he had nurtured over years of isolation and immersion in violent media. It is believed that Cam may have struggled to distinguish between the real world and the fantasy worlds of the video games he played, leading him to view violence as a means of asserting control or gaining power. Cam's decision to target Richard and Diana appears to have been entirely random. He did not stalk or plan his attack on the couple specifically, but rather chose them as victims of opportunity. The randomness is one of the most chilling aspects of the case, as it suggests that Cam's need to commit violence had reached a point where any potential victim could have satisfied his urge. There may have also been triggers in Cam's personal life that contributed to his actions, his increasing isolation, lack of success in finding employment, and failure to form meaningful connections with others likely exacerbated his feelings of anger and frustration. These factors, combined with his immersion in violent fantasy, may have created a perfect storm that ultimately led to the tragic events of September 26, 2017. While the attack on Richard and Diana may have been spontaneous in terms of victims selected, there is evidence to suggest that Cam had been preparing for such an attack for some time. In the weeks leading up to the murders, Cam purchased several items that would later be used in the attack, including a large hunting knife and a pair of gardening shears. The purchase of these weapons was a significant step in Cam's path towards violence. It demonstrated a level of premeditation. Cam actively sought out tools that could be used to inflict serious harm. The fact that he chose weapons that are both easily concealable and capable of causing significant damage suggests that Cam had thought about the logistics of carrying out a violent act, even if he had not yet selected his victims. On the day of the murders, Cam was seen wandering through the Marple neighborhood for several hours before the attack, carried a backpack containing the weapons he would later use, and his movements suggested that he was looking for an opportunity to strike. This behavior indicates that while the specific victims may have been chosen at random, the act itself was not. It was something that Rocky Rambo had been building towards for some time. Cam's actions in the aftermath of the crime also suggest a degree of planning. After the murders, he attempted to clean up and dispose of evidence, indicating that he was aware of the gravity of what he had done and was trying to avoid detection. However, his efforts were ultimately unsuccessful, and within days, law enforcement had gathered enough evidence to identify him and arrest him. The investigation into the Marple murders was a complex and painstaking process that required the full resources and expertise of the Vancouver Police Department. Faced with a crime of such brutal nature, the investigators knew they had to act quickly and methodically to catch the perpetrator and bring justice to the victims. The path to identifying and arresting Rocky Rambo was fraught with challenges, but it ultimately demonstrated the power of diligent police work and forensic science. The investigation began as soon as the first officers arrived at the crime scene on the night of September 26, 2017. The gruesome nature of the murders was immediately apparent, and the VPD recognized that they were dealing with a particularly heinous crime. The house where the Jones lived was quickly cordoned off, and the major crime units was called in to take over the case. The first priority for the investigators was to secure the crime scene and preserve any potential evidence. Forensic teams meticulously combed through the house, collecting blood samples, fingerprint evidence, and other forensic materials that could provide clues about the killer's identity. The brutality of the attack left behind a significant amount of physical evidence, but it was scattered and needed to be carefully analyzed to reconstruct the events that had taken place. Detectives also began canvassing the neighborhood, immediately interviewing residents to gather any information about suspicious activities or unknown individuals seen in the area. The peaceful nature of the Marple neighborhood meant that any out of the ordinary behavior would likely have been noticed by residents, making these early interviews crucial in the hunt for the killer. In addition to canvassing, investigators reviewed surveillance footage from nearby homes and businesses. Marple, whose residential had several locations with security cameras that could have captured the movements of the suspect. Detectives hoped that the footage would provide a visual clue to the killer's identity, or at least establish a timeline of their movements before and after the crime. At this stage, the investigators were working with very little information. Crime appeared to be random, with no clear motive or connection between the victims and the killers. This randomness made the case particularly challenging, as it meant that the usual avenues of investigation, such as exploring personal connections or motives, were unlikely to yield quick results. As the investigation progressed, a critical piece of evidence began to emerge from the collected forensic data. DNA analysis played a pivotal role in identifying the suspect. Blood samples taken from the crime scene were analyzed. Forensic experts were able to isolate a DNA profile that did not belong to either of the victims. The profile was entered in the National DNA Database, which law enforcement agencies use to identify suspects in criminal cases. However, unsurprisingly, the DNA did not immediately match any profiles in the database, suggesting that the perpetrator either had no prior criminal record or had not been previously caught for any crimes. This initially seemed like a dead end, but the forensic team continued to work, knowing that this DNA could eventually lead them to the killer. The breakthrough came when the detectives began piecing together sightings of a suspicious individual seen in Marple area around the time of the murders. Several neighbors had reported seeing a man who did not seem to belong in the neighborhood wandering the streets in the hours leading up to the attack. He was described as being of Asian descent, dressed in dark clothing and carrying a backpack. The descriptions were vague, but they provided a starting point for investigators to narrow down potential suspects. A turning point in the investigation came when forensic experts were able to link the DNA found at the crime scene to Cam. Although his DNA was not initially in the database, further investigation revealed that Cam had been involved in a minor altercation years earlier, during which his DNA had been collected but never connected to a criminal case. This crucial link provided the investigators with the hard evidence they needed to move forward with their case. The arrest of Rocky Rambo marked a critical moment in the investigation of the Marple murders. After weeks of intensive investigation, Vancouver Police Department was finally able to apprehend the man they believe was responsible for one of the city's most shocking and brutal crimes. The process of bringing Cam into custody and the subsequent legal proceedings were crucial steps in ensuring justice for the victims, Richard Jones and Diana Jones. After gathering sufficient evidence linking Cam to the murders, Vancouver Police Department moved quickly to plan and execute his arrest. Given the violent nature of the crime and the potential danger Cam posed to the public, the police approached the situation with extreme caution. They wanted to ensure that the arrest was carried out smoothly and safely, minimizing any risk to the officers involved or to Cam himself. On November 5th, 2017, just over a month after the murders, the Vancouver Police Department made their move. Rocky Rambo was living in a modest apartment in Vancouver, not far from the Marpole neighborhood where the murders had taken place. Police had been monitoring Cam's movements in the days leading up to the arrest, ensuring that they knew his routine and could anticipate his actions. When the time came, the Vancouver PD's emergency response team, a specialized unit trained to handle high-risk operations, was deployed to make their arrest. Early in the morning, the team surrounded Cam's apartment building, securing all possible exits to prevent any chance of escape. The element of surprise was crucial. The police wanted to apprehend Cam without giving him the opportunity to resist or harm anyone. The officers moved in quickly and efficiently. They knocked on Cam's door, identifying them as police, ordering him to open the door. When Cam did not immediately comply, the officers forced entry into the apartment. Cam was inside alone and appeared disoriented by the sudden intrusion. He offered no resistance as the officers subdued him and placed him in handcuffs. Cam's behavior at the time of his arrest was notably passive. According to the officers present, he did not struggle or attempt to flee. He remained silent and cooperative, complying with the police's instructions without question. This calm, almost detached demeanor was consistent with what investigators had learned about Cam during their investigation. He was a man who kept to himself, displayed little emotion, and was difficult to read. After his arrest, Cam was transported to a police station where he was booked and formally charged. The smooth execution of the arrest was a testament to the careful planning and coordination of the Vancouver Police Department, ensuring that Cam was taken into custody without incident. Following Rocky Rambo's arrest, the legal process moved swiftly. The Crown prosecutors tasked with building the case against him charged him with two counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Richard and Diana Jones. First-degree murders are the most serious in Canadian law, reserved for crimes that are premeditated and deliberate. The decision to charge Cam with first-degree murders was based on the evidence gathered during the investigation. The Crown believed that Cam's actions demonstrated clear intent and premeditation. The fact that he had purchased the weapons used in the murders days before the crime, and that he had entered the victim's home with the tools needed to carry out the killings, supported the argument that Cam had planned the attack in advance. The trial of Rocky Rambo was a highly anticipated event, drawing significant public and media attention due to the shocking nature of the Marple murders. The trial took place in the Supreme Court of British Columbia and was presided over by a single judge, as is common in Canadian criminal cases of this magnitude. The proceedings were both emotionally charged and meticulously detailed. The court sought to uncover the truth behind the brutal killings and to determine Cam's culpability. The trial began with opening statements from both the Crown, the prosecution, and the defense. The Crown's opening statement painted a picture of premeditated and calculated violence, arguing that Cam had deliberately chosen to end the lives of Richard and Diana Jones in a brutal and senseless manner. The defense, on the other hand, hinted at a strategy focused on Cam's mental state, suggesting that he was not fully responsible for his actions due to psychological issues. One of the key moments in the trial was the presentation of forensic evidence. The Crown called upon forensic experts who testified about the DNA evidence that linked Cam to the crime scene. The evidence was critical as it placed Rocky Rambo at the location of the murders and tied him directly to the violent acts. The experts explained in detail how Cam's DNA was found on the weapons used in the murders, as well as on various surfaces within the victim's home. Another pivotal moment was the presentation of surveillance footage. The Crown introduced video evidence showing Cam purchasing the knife and gardening shears used in the murders. The footage also captured Cam's wandering through the Marple neighborhood on the day of the murders, seemingly scouting for potential victims. The visual evidence was compelling as it illustrated Cam's movements and actions leading up to the crime, reinforcing the Crown's argument that the murders were premeditated. Witness testimonies also played a crucial role in the trial. Neighbors of Richard and Diana testified about seeing a suspicious figure in the area on the day of the murders, describing a man who matched Cam's appearance. These testimonies helped establish a timeline and supported the prosecution's case that Cam had been in the vicinity of the crime scene with malicious intent. Additionally, the court heard emotional testimonies from friends and family of the victims, who spoke about the devastating impact of the murders on their lives and the community. After weeks of testimony and legal arguments, the trial concluded with closing statements from both the Crown and the defense. The Crown urged the judge to convict Rocky Rambo of first-degree murder, emphasizing the premeditated nature of the crime and Cam or Rocky Rambo's full awareness of his actions. Defense, meanwhile, reiterated their argument that Rocky Rambo's mental state should exempt him from full criminal responsibility. The judge took time to consider the evidence and the arguments presented by both sides before delivering the final verdict. In a detailed ruling, the judge found Rocky Rambo guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder. The judge concluded that Rocky Rambo's actions were indeed premeditated and deliberate, and that he was fully aware of what he was doing at the time of the murders. The judge rejected the defense's argument that he was not criminally responsible due to mental illness, ruling that he understood the nature and consequences of his action. The sentence for first-degree murder in Canada is mandatory, life imprisonment without the possibility of parole for 25 years, and was sentenced accordingly, ensuring that he would spend at least the next 25 years behind bars before he even could be considered for parole. Despite the sentencing, the judge made a statement addressing the gravity of the crime and the impact it had on the victims, families, and community. The judge expressed deep sympathy for the families of Richard and Diana Jones, acknowledging the profound loss they had suffered and the lasting pain caused by Cam's actions. Family members of the victims also had the opportunity to make impact statements during the sentencing. These statements were emotional and heartbreaking as they described the deep void left by the loss of Richard and Diana. Their loved ones spoke of the couple's kindness, their contributions to the community, and the cruel manner in which their lives were taken. The impact statement served as a poignant reminder of the human cost of Cam's actions and the enduring pain that would continue long after the trial was over. The public reaction to the trial of Rocky Rambo was one of widespread shock, anger, and grief. The murders of Richard and Diana Jones had already devastated the community, but its more details emerged during the trial. The horror of the crime deepened. The revelation of Cam's actions, his premeditated purchase of weapons, his cold detachment during the killings, and the lack of any discernible motive left the public struggling to understand how such senseless violence could occur. Throughout the trial, many members of the public followed the proceedings closely, either through media reports or by attending the trial in person. The courtroom was often filled with observers, including friends and families of the victims, local residents, and individuals who had been touched by the case in some way. The emotional impact of the trial was palpable, with many expressing disbelief and sorrow as the gruesome details were revealed. Public discussions in the aftermath of the trial often focused on the randomness of the crime and the fear it instilled. The idea that two innocent people could be brutally murdered in their own home without any apparent reason challenged the sense of safety that many people took for granted. For residents of Marple and Vancouver at large, the case shattered the illusion of security and raised uncomfortable questions about the nature of violence in society. The Marple murders had a profound and lasting impact on the neighborhood, transforming what was once a peaceful and tight-knit community into one grappling with fear, grief, and a shattered sense of security. The long-term effects of the crime are still felt today as residents continue to process the trauma and adjust to a new reality where the safety they once took for granted has been deeply compromised. Before the murders, Marple was known as one of Vancouver's more tranquil neighborhoods, a place where residents felt secure in their homes and on the streets. The area had a strong sense of community, with neighbors often looking out for each other and taking pride in the safety and cohesiveness of their environment. However, the brutal killings of Richard and Diana Jones shook this foundation, leaving the community reeling from shock of such a violent intrusion into their lives. In the immediate aftermath of the murders, there was a palpable sense of fear and vulnerability among the residents. Randomness of the crime committed by someone with no apparent connection to the victims left many feeling that they could no longer trust the security of their own homes. The fact that the murders took place within the confines of a private residence where the victims should have been safe added to the pervasive anxiety. For months after the crime, many residents reported feeling unsafe, particularly during the evening and nighttime hours. This unease was a stark contrast to the sense of safety that had once characterized the neighborhood. The psychological impact of the murders was compounded by the extensive media coverage, continually reminded the community of the horrors that had taken place. The constant exposure to the details of the crime, along with the drawn-out nature of the investigation and trial, meant that the community had little opportunity to recover from the initial shock. The murders became a defining event for Marple, a dark chapter that overshadowed the neighborhood's history and altered its identity. The Marple murders were a tragedy that left deep scars on a community and served as a powerful reminder of the importance of safety, vigilance, and the community's solidarity. As we remember Richard and Diana Jones, let us also take the opportunity to reflect on how we can contribute to creating safer, more connected communities by honoring their memory through action, whether by supporting local initiatives, advocating for better mental health care, or simply being more vigilant in our daily lives. We can help ensure that their legacy is one of positive change and resilience. Thank you for joining us in this week's episode of Murder Monday. If you found this episode interesting, please consider giving it a like, leave a comment, please consider sharing it with others, and as well, hit that subscribe button down below. Together we can make a difference and work towards a future where such tragedies are less likely to occur. And before we go, we'd like to remind you can support the channel by buying us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, and be able to pay them, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. Your support can help make that happen, whether it's $1, $5, $20, $50, $100. Anything you give goes right back into the channel and is greatly appreciated. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or become a patron at patreon.com/truecrimeneversleeps.